and welcome to The Hearing, our music review show here on the channel. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 2003, Parlor by Darling Violetta. Now, before I get into the bio, just a little disclaimer. There is very little information about Darling Violetta online, so some of this is going to be coming from nearly 16-year-old memories. I was active on the band's official forum when this album came out. Also, I'm a little unsure about some of the name pronunciations, so apologies if I get anything wrong. All right, on to the bio. Darling Violetta is, or possibly was, an American/Mexican rock band based in Hollywood, California, who took their name from the salutation used by Bela Lugosi in letters to his mistress, Violetta Napierska. Unique for their use of cello in their music, and best known for composing and performing the opening theme to Buffy the Vampire spinoff Angel, as well as having some of their music featured in Buffy and two of the Vampire the Masquerade games. The band released two EPs, 97's Bathwater Flowers and 99's The Kill You EP, before releasing their only full album, 2003's Parlor. During the recording sessions for Parlor, bassist Addo Addy left the band to pursue a solo career, and following the supporting dates for the album, drummer Steve McManus left to pursue a career as a novelist. In, I want to say, late 03, early 04, there was a post on the forum about some of the songs that the remaining members, Cammie Ellen and Jim Thomas, were working on for their next release. And that was the last we heard from them until 2009, when they reported that they were working on songs for their fourth, as of yet, untitled release. And that was the last anyone heard from the band until January 6th of last year, when Cammie finally reported that Darling Violetta is on, quote, an extended hiatus.
It's been 10 fucking years, man.
DarlingVioletta.com is now up for sale.
Yeah.
As far as I know, Addo is still the only one making music professionally. His latest album, 24 Quadros, was released in 2014. He's originally from Mexico, so most, if not all, of his solo stuff is in Spanish. Steve has released two novels so far, both crime dramas, Red Flag in 2015 and its sequel, Seven Devils in 2018. Cammie's Twitter bio says that she's now working as a love and lifestyle coach. Incidentally, I checked a short video she put out for an online seminar she does to get the pronunciation of her last name. I've always pronounced it Ellen, which is why I messed it up slightly earlier. It's Ellen. Okay. And Jim's Twitter bio says that he's a poker fiend, LA Kings fan, and co-founder of Darling Violetta. None of the other band members' bios mentioned Darling Violetta. Parlor, as I mentioned earlier, is the band's first and only full studio album. It was released on February 25th, 2003. Yes, my 31st birthday. Produced by Lewis White and features Cammie Ellen on vocals, Jim Thomas on guitar, Steve McManus on drums, with additional musicians Chris Pott, Addo Addy, and Michael Renninger on bass, Jerry Sudiak on cello, Brett Levick on background vocals, Steve Hooneman on horns, Ben Peeler on lap steel guitar, and Lewis White on synthesizers. Reminder, I don't edit any songs into the episodes for copyright reasons, but down in the description and on our blog at johnandscotto.com, you'll find links to the album on Spotify and YouTube. On to the tracks, and this one's going to be interesting because there are several very short tracks, starting with number one, Star Shoebox, or as it's called on Spotify and Amazon Intro. I ripped the CD over the weekend because I should mention I listened to this about a week ago, because when I'd listened to the album on Spotify previously, there was a bit of a couple of songs missing. I listened to it to make sure it was all there and send you the link. And spoiling my review, I fell back in love with the album. And so I ripped the CD at very high quality, and all of the interludes have names that are only on the ripped, if you can only get if you rip the CD.
Honestly, I could have lived without all the intros and interludes.
Yeah, they're odd and interesting. They
take away from the flow of the album. They don't really add many. I think there's like one of them that's, I think like the second one is good. The one with all the horns at one time, just for like a few seconds, was probably the most interesting one of all of them. It was really just It was obviously just leftover foot, you know, stuff well, that they didn't know what to do with, and they just kind of put out there.
This first one, Star Shoebox, is the horn, cello, and synth part recorded as the for the pre-chorus of the last song, Star Shoes. Very Beatles influenced. I pointed out on their forum when it was released that it sounds a lot like a guitar part from the song Spoiled and Rotten from the Kill You EP, and asked if it was, you know, put in there to bridge the two releases. Jim Thomas replied saying that it wasn't intentional and he'd never noticed the similarity before I'd mentioned it. So I pointed out something about something he wrote that he never got.
Oh.
Similar rhythm and chord, you know, the way the chord is put together. And I think it ties the beginning and the end of the album nicely together to have.
Yeah,
you know,
I hadn't thought of the ending album, but yeah, it does tie those together.
You know, once you get to Star Shoes, it does tie it together nicely.
But nothing else, like the interludes, just don't.
No, they're all pretty pointless.
It's just kind of like, huh?
On to track two, the first full song, A Smaller God.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basically about flirting with a guy, but the singer or the main character in the song flirting with a guy. And then her intuition, the smaller god, kind of warning her off of him. The chorus is, I could have died last night, but I heard the voice of a smaller god.
Well, and I mean, this is definitely one of the stronger tracks on the album. I mean, her voice just comes right out at you mm-hmm. as soon as you go. There's no mistaking. It's very Alanis Morissette.
Interesting.
It's which it was like one of her late 90s songs that were was kind of like Uninvited, I think was the name of that one, where it was very cashmere.
The only one I really liked.
Yeah, it was good. And I mean, yeah it's very similar to that.
Love the nice, simple intro riff in the verse. Jim Thomas, I was playing guitar for about 20 years when I discovered Darling Violetta. And Jim Thomas was the first guitarist in a long time to really influence me. He just has this great kind of minimalist off-kilter style where he doesn't play a note he doesn't have to. And the ones he chooses are really interesting. He doesn't take the conventional approach at all. So it's this nice soft verse with this really simple riff. And then just this loud chorus just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
With this great wall of sound. That's not just guitar. It's cello. It's
right.
Some synthesizers. And then he doesn't really repeat the guitar figure in the second verse. I like it when bands change it up in the second verse a little bit.
Yeah.
And an interesting background vocal on the line, Learn to Live Again. It's this low vocal. It's not Jim, who occasionally sang backup live. It could have been Cammy. I think it was probably Brett Levick, who sings backup on a later song. And it's got just kind of this interesting Bowie kind of sound to it.
I was going
to
say, does he do that Bowie voice later in the album?
He's
singing like
the real
this?
Low part. Yeah, that's Brett Lovett. Yeah.
Okay.
I never thought Bowie. We'll get to
it. Oh, yeah. So very much is.
I always thought Leonard Cohen, but we'll get to that. and then after there's an actual guitar solo, which is unusual for Darling Violetta. There's like three on the album. But there's also this really nice soft bridge. They're great at dynamics. You know, they go kind of mid-tempo in the verse, real loud on the chorus, very soft for the bridge. And the solos when he does play them are very nicely melodic. On to track three, Brap. This is the brass piece that you were talking about.
Yeah, this was the only interlude that I'd keep. where it belongs.
It's a brass band that starts out kind of normal sounding and then just goes rapidly off kilter into cacophony. You know.
Yeah, they kind of loop it on itself when they were just them fucking around in the studio.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that sounds cool, but there's nothing we could do into a song.
Right.
So we'll have these interludes.
On to track four, Pauline, one of my favorites.
Yeah, it was like, is this a cover? Because I could have sort of heard the lyrics before, but now it's...
The original. Love had the drums come in the beginning. Steve McManus is amazing. His decision, I hope he's happy and fulfilled in his career as a writer, but this applies to most of the band, his decision to stop making music professionally was a loss to music. He's one of my favorite drummers.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's fucking amazing on this. There's no question about it. And this whole album.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love how kind of present, but subtle the bass is. It doesn't stick out, but it's solidly there. And it's basically about, I don't know if she's a starlet or just a woman who expects to have everything handed to her. And she's, I think she's probably getting older. I think she's maybe an aging starlet.
Oh, yeah.
Who's realizing, she's not having anything handed to her anymore.
I thought this was the traditional ballad, really, where, she's giving up that love and letting her go live her life while still being condescending at the same time.
Possibly. The chorus is, Pauline is
beautiful. The world can give her everything, well, huh?
Pauline is beautiful, expects the world to give her everything. Pauline, yeah. Expects the world to lay down at her feet, flowers for the queen. And it just kind of has a Hollywood feel to it. I was getting kind of a starlet vibe. Love the line, paper sky peels off the wall. Cammy's lyrics are impressionist, I'll say. Not quite abstract like Michael Stipe, yeah, where it's like, what the fuck is he talking about? I always know what she's talking about, but she finds very clever ways of saying it. Love the groove. It's very led by the drums again, McMahon. Yeah. This is amazing. Nice timing change in the chorus. There's just some, nice subtle timing, timing work done on the song. Great atonal cello work in the second verse. Jerry Sidiak, who played on their last two releases, rest in peace, because I from what I've read, she passed away the same year this was put out from cancer.
Oh, yeah.
At least one source says that. And she does some really interesting things, because she doesn't play, sometimes she plays conventional parts, but sometimes she's just making noise. And she does it really well. And they throw a lot of effects on her, and it's just, it doesn't sound like it's what you would expect from a cello. And the background vocals in the second chorus just get almost kind of overtake Cammy. it's just this wall of vocals, which I love when they get to that second chorus. And the bridge is a great example of Jim Thomas's minimalism. He plays like four notes. It's all, it's all vocals, bass, and drums.
Right.
Jim just plays like four notes, but they sit perfectly. And her vocals at the ending, or toward the end, when it just builds. Cammy, again, great loss to music that she's not singing professional anymore, because she has an amazing voice. The dynamic she can pull off with her voice are incredible.
It could just be the way the music business went,
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't want to speculate. There was no reason given. Well, no reasons other than what I said.
Let's be honest. It is harder to make a living at this if you're not on the top of the mountain,
The thing is, they got a huge break from Joss Whedon. He put them in an episode of Buffy. He gave them the theme song to a national a TV show that lasted 5 years.
Yeah.
Joss Whedon gave them a huge break. I don't know if they really knew how to capitalize on it.
Well, that, I think, and I even saw people feel the same way that I do about this, and I only had expectations coming in because of the one song that you played for me. I mean, I had kind of an expectation that it was going to be...
For those who might know it, I played I Want to Kill You from the Kill You EP last week after we recorded.
Right, so, you go into this, and I'm expecting some, gothic, overlay. And instead, I feel I kind of got the Partridge Family in some tracks.
Interesting.
It's good. It's just not what I was expecting. And then I saw, I think somebody had on the review, that was into their music from, Angel and stuff. They were expecting the same thing. And then they're like, wait, what?
The Angel theme is all cello. Cammy just sings some ahs here and there. And it's very dark and, gothic. And they do the gothic thing here and there.
Yeah, but I've never watched an episode.
You were never a fan of the Buffyverse. That's why I was explaining it to you, because I know you've never seen it. I don't think you've ever seen an episode of Buffy either.
No, I don't think I have. Yeah,
so that's why I was explaining what it is. Where I was going with, they got this huge break from Joss. And I don't know if they ever really played much outside of L.A.
Right. And then you see the album cover and everything on this too. You think you're getting this heavy goth, dark thing. And I mean, it was a lot, there are some morbid, morbidity to the ballads, but a lot of it is just, when you start bringing the horns in, it's kind of like, wait, what's this?
I like that versatility. I like that they don't just do the gothic thing. They go in a lot of different directions. And from their previous releases, they've always done that. They've always had a lot of versatility in their music.
But, you know, the band, they really remind me of more than anybody else. And it's kind of funny. And maybe it's just because we reviewed them last week, but
Pearl Jam. They remind me a lot of
Pearl Jam.
Interesting.
Because, I mean, I could see Eddie singing a lot of these songs. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would have a different sound to him. It would be a baritone instead of that higher register. But, and I could see her singing a Pearl Jam song easily, too, in her own way. just that want not wanting to do one thing.
Right.
Which, I mean, Pearl Jam was very vehemently said that they didn't want to be in a punk band, when I was 10 years old.
And they didn't want to keep it now. They didn't want to keep making 10, even though it was hugely popular.
Right. They could have made 10 4 more times and then would have made.
Which, as much as I prefer 10 to the rest of the stuff, I deeply respect that they did.
They left the money on the table and said, fuck you. This is what we're going to put out as our lead single.
Right.
But that's what these guys kind of did. Mm-hmm. They could have played the goth. I mean, at least for their first album, they probably should have stuck with it a bit more.
But anyway, back to the album, onto track 5, another interlude, The Paper Sky. Just a nice, great, nice bass and synth bass and drum groove, a little bit of real bass, really nice kind of flanged middle section, ends with some kind of 80s sounding keys, just a nice little short groove.
Yeah, and that really, this is probably the first one where I was like, ooh, this really isn't working, because over the next track is a great companion to Pauline, and would have been even more effective, I think, without the interlude.
You're right. Yeah, I'm thinking about it. See, I know the album too well.
You expect the interludes to be there. You're accustomed to those interludes being there once you've listened to it a number of times.
Thinking about the end of Pauline into the beginning of the next one, you're absolutely right. And this is track 6, Over You. This is another one of my favorites. Love how it opens with just bass and cello and a little bit of percussion. And this is definitely Adda. There are certain songs on the album that I know he played on because he was on the previous two albums or releases, the EPs. And he has a very unique style. Love the interplay between the cello and the bass. And this is basically a rock song, but with all acoustic guitars.
Yeah, this is a lot more standard ballad, I feel, than Pauline, where Pauline was in its own planet, where they dialed it down even more.
This is really a straight ahead rock song, just all acoustic, which is a little different. Love how delicate Cammy is on the verses. She can kind of like verge on a whisper beautifully.
Yeah.
And I love the line, you wait for an excuse to sleep away your either evolution or revolution. I'm not really sure. Yeah. Evolution, I think, makes a little more sense. And then she does another great job of that in the bridge, where she goes from the whisper, just builds up to this shout. But it's a straight ahead rock song. I won't get over you this time is the hook about, a failed relationship.
I almost wondered if they were doing a Jeff Buckley reference. Because there's a line, how do you like the lilac wine over there?
Oh, it may have been a reference,
And I started interpreting it as, someone lost in a different way, someone passed on.
Okay.
That they can't get over losing.
How do you like the lilac wine over there on the other side? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
I don't know if a lot of it, I can't pull a lot of lyrics off, to mind offhand. But I don't know if a lot of it makes sense with that. But maybe.
But when I first heard it was like, oh yeah, you're just getting over someone in a relationship. But then when I heard the lilac wine over there, I was kind of like, oh, what if it's somebody passing on? Sometimes, there are breakup songs you think are breakup songs, but it's really about someone passed on.
We ran into one of those recently where the other way around, the one on the Big Wreck album, one of the songs I thought was about death and was probably just about a breakup.
Yeah, fucker, you're dead to me.
On to track 7, no interlude this time, another full song, Just a Mine. Really nice time to go really soft.
And here's where we get some Partridge Family.
Start off with acoustic guitar with some horns. I thought the horns were a really nice touch on this song.
Yeah, I don't know if I dig the horns on these.
Because it's just something different to mix in with the acoustic guitars. You don't expect it.
Right, you don't expect it, but I'm not sure if I dig it.
Just a really nice soft ballad. with this really surprising lap steel that comes in the chorus. It just gets really big.
This was actually the first one where I'm like, hey, these guys sound a lot like Pearl Jam in some way.
Yeah, I can definitely hear this as a Pearl Jam song, yeah.
You know, just the voice, the subtle guitar work, you know, and then you get that unexpected musical direction. That, I mean, I don't think Pearl Jam's done horns yet, but I could see them doing that soon.
And just this big steel guitar coming in and just distorting this chorus, you know, going to this big chorus, I thought was a nice touch. Just a little side note, on the title on the ripped CD, the last E is missing.
Oh, yeah.
Just weird little typo. I thought I'd mention it.
Yeah, that is a weird... Okay.
I actually had to check the back of the CD itself, the jewel case, to make sure it was spelled with an E at the end. Okay, on to the next interlude, 5th and 34th. Just some guy talking about getting directions with a piano in the background. Doesn't really make any sense. On to track 9, Bardot Barbiturate. This one took a long time to grow on me. In fact, I'm only just getting into it. This was originally one of the tracks that I was skipped.
I was trying to figure out who she was doing vocally. Because, I mean, you know, there's some of that where, you know...
there's certainly influences.
And, you know, after we reviewed Pearl Jam last week, I was kind of wondering, why the fuck do I like these guys so much? And, you know, kind of went through their catalog and realized Vedder is this actor. Like, he plays roles, and she does the same thing in this,
definitely.
And it took me a while, but I'm thinking she's doing Cyndi Lauper here.
Interesting.
Which is an excellent choice, of course. If there's anybody vocally you want to do, for a woman, Cyndi Lauper's a really good one to go with. And very unexpected, too, especially in 03.
And this song is just beautifully off-kilter. Love the fretless bass. And the vocal gives me chills. At the point where she's just on that verge of a whisper.
I'm trying to decide if this is my favorite or if there's still one more to go.
It's
definitely up there for me.
Yeah. Love the kind of pseudo-military drums that he puts in. It's this really off-kilter song with this fretless bass and this whispered vocal, and Steve is just playing a military part.
It's definitely my favorite vocal performance of hers.
Yeah, not what I expected from
maybe not my favorite song on the album, but definitely her vocals are the best here, I think.
And there's two really interesting guitar parts on the chorus, because it goes big on the chorus again, and one is this big distorted wall of sound, and the other is this flanged guitar that just plays a little riff next to it. Set each other off beautifully. We've got another guitar solo. We're halfway through the album. He's played two. I think these guys were really in the forefront of that no guitar solos movement that kind of came in the 2000s.
That Jello was always a profound, you know.
He
never liked them.
Well, there were always bands who didn't do them, but
he didn't really like them.
Right. But in the 2000s, there was kind of a movement to get away from guitar solos. You know, after grunge and hair metal, the rock bands kind of said, "Okay, we're not doing that anymore."
Which is kind of weird. It could be why rock because I mean, a guitar solo is a pretty important part of it, I would say.
As a guitar solo player, I won't necessarily disagree with the importance of solos. But there's a great kind of flanged effect on the vocal in this one, and they don't put a lot of effects on Cammy's voice, so when they do it brings out some interesting tones. The solo kind of comes back again over the last verse, which I thought was a nice touch. It kind of restates that melody, because the solo isn't just, you know, blowing his cookies. All of his solos are very melodic and planned out, which it works nice behind some vocals. And she just really belts the last chorus. You know, as much as I'm talking about her whispering, when she belts, she really fucking belts.
She goes really high, too, in this.
Yeah. On to track 10, Say You Love Me. This is another one that is still taking a long time to grow on me.
Lots of ballads.
Yeah.
I think they were really pushing their luck with that. I mean, you don't want to do too many. I think there should be a limit. sometimes if you're a rock band.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they were, I would never have thought to compare them to Pearl Jam, but that was really apropos. They're doing what they want, which could be part of why they never really made it. This is, I like what I thought of is I've probably listened more to this in the last week than I had previously.
Yeah. That,
this and Bardo Barbiturate, because those were always the two songs I skipped. I'm starting to really like them. And I've taken to calling this one the David Lynch song.
Well, they take, this one is like super traditional standard and give it a more darker feel to it.
It's very traditional, very kind of 50s song.
Yeah.
But it's really creepy and off kilter and beautifully right. creepy.
That is exactly it.
You know, it's, I don't know how they did it, but they took a very traditional song, and I don't know if it's her vocals or Jim's guitar playing, or I think there's a synth playing a really kind of dissonant chord in the background very subtly, but they just make it make your, you know, shoulders go up with this traditional 50s love song.
Well, right. And it's about believability. I mean, it's about being an actor or actress where, I mean, you know, when it was Diana Ross and, you know, Baby Love, you know, you can hear that pain in her voice where like Michael Bolton,
right?
And, yeah. And he's singing, you know, how am I supposed to live without you? Yeah. Makes it sound like he makes it sound like, oh, who's going to pick up my dry cleaning now? Kind of thing. Not I'm going to fucking die. You know,
right.
He sounds whiny. Whereas here, she puts it in that this could be it.
Right. I would, with Bolton, I would go more to, since it was his first big hit, Dock of the Bay, and you can really compare him to Otis Redding and
holy fuck.
No.
Who, I mean, how that was even a hit.
Yeah.
No. Why even think of doing that? Like, oh yeah, he has all this emotional pain and expression and for just the simple act. And here I'm just going to be as dull and white bread as humanly possible.
And I mean, we're tangenting because that's what we do.
But I'm hitting the notes.
Yeah.
Well, that's all that matters.
Bolton belts everything. There's no subtlety.
Right.
Otis Redding could belt, but Dock of the Bay was a beautifully subtle performance for him.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't scream. He doesn't belt that song. It's just, he's resigned to his life. That's what the song is about.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, wandering aimlessly. It's just like, I guess this is what I'm doing now. Fuck. You know, I mean, there's so much subtext in what he does when you hear him singing. Otis singing it.
Right, of course.
Michael Bolton is just like, I'm hitting notes.
Yeah, really loud.
Can you hear me singing this loudly? That's very nice, Michael. Why are you shouting?
Right. And back to Say You Love Me. The actor thing is apropos because somehow she decided to go creepy. And I don't know exactly what she did that was creepy. You know, I can't nail down what is creepy about the song.
Right.
But I think just the culmination of everything just is.
And I really wish sometimes I was better versed in the language of music and what they're doing here that makes it gives it the creepiness.
I am pretty well versed in the language of music, and I haven't been able to put it together for 16 years. So I think it's the whispered vocals, and I'm sure there's a dissonant synthesizer back there doing something. On to track 11, and now for something completely different. Candy Jones.
This could be my my favorite for the pick. I mean, it's either this or the first track.
Okay, Bardo Barbiturate, what you're talking about. Not the first track.
Smaller God or this. Okay.
Well, but you've got time to decide.
I think Bardo Barbiturate, I think I like the vocal performance better than this song.
Speaking of which, I think you need to catch up on your best of playlist.
Yeah.
Like you have recently.
I thought I'd been putting it in as I go along.
I looked at it a few weeks ago and you missed a few weeks. But unless you've caught up since then, which is possible. Anyway, Candy Jones, it's a song about a spy. And it's just this frenetic drum line, this great, you know, melodic bass part, and a really playful vocal with two slide guitars. I think one is Jim, one is Ben Peeler on each side, because one is a conventional guitar. He hits frets here occasionally, which a lap steel isn't going to do because a lap steel doesn't have frets. So it's Jim playing as Les Paul that isn't set up for slide, with a slide on one side and probably Ben Peeler on the lap steel on the other. And it's identical parts, just a split second away from each other.
It could be the most Pearl Jam-like song on the whole album, actually.
That's another interesting. And I'm not going to argue because you know Pearl Jam far better than I do. I think about
Hail Hail and how they were playing two different parts at the same time, and going with it. Or Red Mosquito, where they're having the dialogue between him and the mosquito. Yeah.
And I love the bass dyads going into the solo. It's this descending part, and dyad is two notes played at the same time.
Yeah,
which you never hear on a bass line.
It's an absolute kick-ass bass line. I really think as a band, they're at their top of their game on this one, which is probably why it's also my favorite track on it.
And I love Cammy's laughs and sighs during the solo. She's just having a blast. Because it's this spy who is just kind of flirting with, her nemesis.
Right.
And it's a really fun song. On to track 12, Skitter. This is the only interlude that I don't like because it's this drum and synth bass thing, and there's just this ear-splitting high note at the beginning.
I mean, this is genius for the era of Spotify because you know how many extra plays they're getting and how many, if it goes for 30 seconds or more, it's credited as a track.
Like a decade before Spotify existed.
Yeah, they somehow knew. Who knew?
On to track 13, Second Skin. This is my favorite. This is the only song from the album that I've listened to regularly since 2003. Love the drum line. This is my favorite thing that Steve McManus ever played. And it's a great, mostly whispered vocal.
Yeah.
And the bass groove is definitely Addo, because he's just following the chords, but the rhythm he gives to it just drives the song perfectly. Love the belted note at the end of the first verse. It's a love song, but it's about just desperately needing the person you're in love with. And this is where Brett Levick's vocal comes in on the chorus.
Eat that Bowie background vocal.
It's kind of Bowie now that you mention it. He sings the chorus an octave down from Cammy.
Right.
Or maybe two octaves. And it's, to me, it always sounded like Leonard Cohen.
I'm thinking we're, Liam Lynch's Bowie.
Leonard Cohen,
a wizard with a hot guitar. Yeah, yeah.
Leonard Cohen, or maybe Nick Cave. Some, it's that kind of thing. Love the additional percussion in verse two. He just brings in the second percussion part. He could have played them both at the same time. I'm not sure. It just adds this little extra to the groove. And this is a great example of Jim's weird minimalism again, because again, on the verses, he just plays four notes. Waits a couple bars, plays four notes, but it fits the song beautifully.
Oh, yeah. I think if there weren't as many ballads on this album, this probably would have stood out more for me. But I think we're at least in our fourth or fifth ballad by this point. So
I'll give you an idea of how much I love this song. I was in a very, very problematic relationship in 2005. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, boy.
This was our song. Fortunately, I was already in love with the song. I was already in love with the song before I met her, and I still love it in spite of that relationship.
I was first laughing because I was just thinking of the joke of what sick fuck comes up with the skit killing their ex-girlfriend over and over again. This was your song?
Yes. Well, it's a beautiful love song.
You taken?
It's a beautiful love song. The lyrics aren't dark at all.
Okay.
The lyrics are just about needing that person, the person you love. Your brilliance and beauty has got me reeling. In sunlight and shadows, I believe you've set me free. You set me free.
Okay.
It's a beautiful love song in terms of the lyrics. It's just is kind of creepy in terms of the way it's played.
I mean, Second Skin connotates a...
No, it's
image of a snake shedding their skin, and it's their new skin.
The idea is kind of also shown in the line. I look at my reflection, I see yours instead. We're inhabiting the same space. Show me your beautiful flaws and tell me how you got each scar. it's kind of, it's a little creepy, but it's a very straightforward love song. And then on the bridge, Kemi decides to start scatting. It's just a scat vocal with this really sparse guitar, great melodic bass again. And the chorus comes back and she just belts the hell out of it this time. On to track 14, Benediction. This is my weakest.
It feels a lot more new wave.
It's really just a conventional rock song.
It's kind of a, she gets a little Gwen Stefani doing the talk here.
Right, yeah. There's an odd clicking sound just before the bass comes in that sounds like a cassette door being closed.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that too.
I've never been able to figure out what that is.
Or I thought it was just a door opening. I don't know. Or closing. I don't know. It's just a weird.
A door closing makes sense with the lyrics because it's about bad relationship, you know.
I thought it was aight.
You'll never hurt me again, you know, with this big, the chorus is the most rock thing, and I'm spelling that R-A-W-K thing that Jim ever played.
I'd spell that eight with two I's instead of L and R.
That spelling of rock, that spelling of rock is one of their things they did on the forums when they would talk about rock music, because they didn't play rock music.
Yeah.
It was a joke. This is a rock song. Incidentally, I think I have probably on Zombie Takeout quoted a slogan of theirs. That I've always loved. Their slogan was "Darling Violetta," not for everyone, because what's for everyone is boring. But yeah, this is just a standard rock song. My weakest. Onto Space Mime. I actually thought it was Space Mine until I noticed it last night.
Oh.
Space Mime, and it's just a voice in French with some radio interference. On to track 16, Beautiful. This is a very close second to my favorite.
She goes a little Bjork here, huh?
Yeah, I can hear that. It's drum and bass percussion that I'm pretty sure was edited together. Steve didn't just play it live. I don't think you could play this live.
But I think the delicate Bjork I think it really sets up that when she gets aggressive on it, and it really makes it better.
But it's this drum and bass drum part. You know, that genre, drum and bass, the dance music genre, with this affected acoustic guitar and these synths. The bass comes in a little bit in the beginning, and you don't hear the bass the rest of the song.
This is the one where she's doing a different character too, right? Like towards the end, or am I confusing this with another?
I don't think it's this one. I mean, I think it's the same character. It's about, again, a failed relationship.
Yeah.
She again whispers it in kind of a creepy way.
I'm trying to think where she kind of goes a little. She almost goes a little Slipperman.
Okay. And there's some great kind of periodic kind of interference and distortion on the vocal, which again just makes your shoulders come up. Love the line, "You're running out of promises. I'm running out of innocence." And it's just about someone who, you know, she thought she would be with, and it just went nowhere. If you weren't ever coming back, why didn't you just tell me that? Dressed in sex and stardust lies, subconscious dreams are so unkind. And then the chorus gets much more forceful on the chorus, where she's singing that.
Yeah, I did like this one overall.
Another great line. "Icicle dreams are the memories gone by. Have you ever seen a lullaby on fire?"
Yeah, I thought that's what she said.
Yeah. And I think lullaby, there's some references to youth, but I think lullaby in the sense is the hope of the relationship is what she, you know, lulls herself to sleep with. And when she sings "On Fire," her vocal is amazing.
Yeah.
She screams that line. It's the most controlled scream I've ever heard. just terrifying. And she hits some amazing high notes at the end. You said she went high earlier.
They shouldn't have been afraid of the rock, you know, because, I mean, she's got a voice that's very suited for it.
Yeah, but the high notes she hits at the end are amazing. And at the very end, the song just slows down. And I don't mean the band slows down. They took the recording and very quickly slowed it.
Yeah.
Which I loved. It's just this off-kilter ending that you don't expect. I use that a lot. I think I use that expression a lot this time. And it fits the band. And finally, the final interlude, "Enough Rope to Hang Yourself." Fitting for your take on the interludes. It's just synth and electric drums with some odd vocals. I think it's just chatter from the studio.
Right, exactly. It was kind of like a, oh, this really was just leftovers they strung together. I was like, that's what I thought in the first place.
On to track 18, Star Shoes, Love Is Everything, the last song. Just a nice big mid-tempo ballad love song. Very Beatly, especially on the pre-chorus.
Yeah, not a fan of this one. I'd say she's their most Susie Sue here. Uh-huh. She's at her most Susie Sue, but the whole psychedelic thing, no.
It's a nice song. The lyrics are great. I love the references to Dolly and Monet.
I thought lyrically it's pretty much almost like a Ruddle song, you know, where it's like love is everywhere and love
that's the chorus.
Yeah, but it's repeated a lot. Yeah.
That's the chorus, which is a little boring, but on the verses, there are references to Gala and Dolly, Monet's Viola Snow. There's some nice references in the verses. Yeah. The bridge is just classic Sparse Darling Violetta. Love the interplay toward the end between the lead and the background vocal. And the song is kind of unintentionally prophetic. The last line of the song is, "This is my last song." The last song on what turned out to be their last album, and as far as I know, the last thing Cammy sang professionally.
Wow.
So yeah, it just kind of turned out to be interestingly prophetic. And I love, as everything fades out at the end, you're left with this hum that you don't hear until then, but it was probably there for the entire song.
Right.
So would you recommend it?
Easily, yeah. Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think there's... They don't make it easy for you to like it, but
you have to love a band that challenges you, though.
They bury the gems in a lot of waste. I think I would, you know, make a playlist without the interludes.
Well, the interludes. The interludes. I definitely see your point. I'm just used to them.
See how it goes.
It was a great what the fuck at the time.
Also, I mean, there were a lot of ballads, so I don't know which one I would do away with. You know, because I don't think I listened to it enough to make that kind of call.
It's interesting that you're doing away, you would do away with a ballad, and I would do away with the rock song.
I mean, unless you're into that scene,
well, actually,
you should not be doing that many ballads.
And I actually wouldn't do away with Benediction. I like the song. I just think it's the weakest on the album. I do listen to it now and then. And for me, it's one of my favorite albums. Doing this review gave me a chance to fall back in love with it. So, of course, I strenuously recommend it.
Yeah.
I just, the fact that 3/4 of this band are no longer making music professionally is such a loss. Because, Jim is the first person in 20 years to influence me as a guitar player. Cammy has an incredible chameleon-like voice. And McManus is one of the greatest drummers of all time.
But, yeah, I think... It was after I listened to it the first time, and I think I was looking up, I forgot where I saw the review. I think it was on Amazon. Someone was just like, this wasn't, you know, what I signed up for.
If you had listened to Bathwater Flowers and the Kill You EP, it would have been what you signed up for, because they've always had a really wide variety on their stuff. If you're just coming from Angel, which is where I came from initially, from Angel, yeah, and I was a little surprised that they had all of these layers, but I liked that.
But I mean, I think you made a mistake by playing me the song you played for me last week. Because it was very, that was leading to, was the straight up Doors,
right.
Fucking chaos, you know. I want to kill you, you know. And I was expecting the shiny, happy people here.
Let's give them a little more credit than that. And the reason I played you for that one is because I was very tempted to review the Kill You EP instead of Parlor, but really just for that song, because I really wanted to get your reaction to that song, because it is so left field and interesting. And that is it for Parlor by Darling Violetta. Until next time, and we'll be reviewing Rhinoceros by Calva Louise. They're a very new band. In fact, as we're recording this, their first album, Rhinoceros, was just released last Friday. And they only released 3 singles before that are on Rhinoceros. So I can't even give you a preview without spoiling it.
There's a great Spotify ad right now. Like, have you ever heard of this band? They wear masks and they sing backwards, and they haven't even heard of themselves yet.
Nice.
That's kind of like where we're at, man.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I just love that we're now bringing in a new band after so much 90s stuff. And even this was 2003, so it's bordering on 90s. the joke last year was, are we ever going to get out of the 80s? Because we did like two or three 80s albums
we
in a row.
We did do a lot of 80s last year, didn't we?
Well, no, we only did, we did a few in a row, which is what that started that joke, is are we ever going to do anything out from the 80s? We really didn't touch the 80s after that. Now we're starting with a bunch of 90s stuff, and it's kind of, I guess every year we're going to step forward a decade. But a very, very new band. I think this is, again, going to be the most, this will be the most recent album we've reviewed.
Would have to be.
Bandmade was the previous holder. We did that 3 weeks after it was released. I think something like 2 weeks. Anyway, until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.